Support for KNKX comes from WSECU, offering 3 new Visa credit cards and 3 new checking accounts. WSECU's goal is to help make the right card make a difference. More information is available at WSECU.org. WSECU, serving Washington since 1957.
We often have stories that are longer than, you know, the typical kind of NPR 4-minute feature or something like that. And you hear one of these like 10-minute or even 12-minute long stories on our show and you think, oh, there's a lot going on in there. But there are occasionally times when you have no idea what's not in the story, what got left on the cutting room floor. And like, how much tape did I bring back from this time?
You graciously left 3 hours of tape on my desk for me to cut up and cut it down to about 10, 12 minutes.
You are very welcome.
Thank you every day for that.
Well, I'm Gabriel Spitzer. I'm here with Kevin Kniestad. You're listening to Sound Effect. And this week on the podcast, we are playing a story about an artist named Jack Gunter and his quest to recover his paintings lost in Siberia. And then stick around afterwards. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that didn't make it into the story, but are definitely worth hearing about. So let's have a listen on Sound Effect from KNKX. I recently headed up to South Camino Island to visit artist Jack Gunter at his studio gallery.
It's about a 5,000 square foot chamber, and it's filled with the first lights after Edison invented the light bulb. It's filled with Frank Lloyd Wright original furniture and maybe 2,000 of my paintings.
While I was there, Jack showed me a particular series of paintings.
Okay, well, here's one where there's a 747 going straight down and a 5-foot by 4-foot painting, and it's coming straight down and going to crash into Helen's kitchen because Helen pissed me off. And I crashed into her 8 times in this series. Here's one of
these paintings were missing from Jack's collection for 25 years. They were trapped half a world away, waiting for Jack to take a crazy, winding journey to recover them. Before we get to that, a little background on Jack Gunter. Before he discovered art, he got his PhD in organic chemistry. He published books and produced films. By the early 80s, he was teaching art to middle schoolers, despite having no art experience whatsoever. So he decided to give painting a whirl himself.
And I went home and said, I'm going to try a painting. And I tried a painting, and it was really, really good, and I was astonished. I said, Jesus, I'm a painter.
Jack threw himself into the art world, and he was busily creating until one fateful day.
I was at an antique show down in the town of Brimfield, about 100 miles away, on a weekend, sleeping under my truck, and they woke me up and said, oh, we're so glad you're alive because the city block you had your apartment in burned down, the whole city block. People died. They said, don't even go home. There's just a big piece of tape around the whole block. And I was on the 4th floor, and people later said that they stood on the sidewalk and looked up through the 4th floor windows and saw my paintings burning on the walls. So I came back to just nothing. My son asked me after the fire, I had painted like 5 beautiful paintings of him. He said, all my paintings burned up. Does that mean I'm going to die? And I said, well, no, John, the paintings have nothing to do with your life and your great life ahead of you. And I had lost 2 other series of paintings in the same year from another fire. So basically, I just figured I was sort of, my paintings were not cursed, but they were destined to go away. I had no trust of permanence at all. So I had a dog and a pickup truck, and I decided I wanted to go out and try my luck out west.
It took Jack a while before he could create again.
Well, I couldn't paint for 7 years. I really didn't trust the permanency of any of my work. I couldn't even point to anything to say I was a painter.
Jack settled in Stanwood, Washington. He eased back into art, painting versions of the stories old-timers in the neighborhood would tell. Around then, SeaTac Airport was planning for a new 3rd runway. They were considering a handful of locations, including Jack's new home, Stanwood.
So the debate went on, and I decided that I was going to do a series of paintings about the effect an airport would have to Stanwood, and I was one of the people that did not want the airport. So since I was painting now, I did a whole series of paintings where airplanes were crashing into Stanwood in various fashions. And I took everything that Stanwood liked, and I crashed a 747 into it.
SeaTac did not wind up building in Stanwood. Helen's kitchen was safe. But Jack's paintings got some unexpected attention.
And one day, the head of the newspaper, the Stanwood Commander News, came over, and he had six Russians with him. The end of the wall in communism was sort of looming ahead, and this group of Russian business people decided to come over and make some economic partnerships and a little peace reach. So the Russian in charge said, how would you like to come to the Soviet Union and exhibit your paintings? About a month later, I get a letter from him, and he says, yes, I'm inviting you to come to come to Russia, or Soviet Union at the time. So I invited another buddy of mine who was a wonderful, crazy, naive artist. And so we ended up in Moscow. But we had no official documents. And this was not the Russian government offering us a show in Russia. This is eight citizens saying, come on over and we'll get you some art shows. And they saw all these big crates and said, what is this? I said, you cannot come in with these. And so Valerian finally leaped over the customs gate, and now he's into the customs area where we are, and he's yelling at these guys in Russian, and they're yelling back, and he says, Dan, you stay here with the paintings? Jack, come with me. And so he takes me up to the third floor at the airport, and this woman up there takes three carbons, puts them in a typewriter, cranks them together, and he looks at me, Valerian, said, are you a member of a political organization? And I said, I'm a member of the Stanwood-Siberian Cultural Exchange, which is a group I made up right there in her office. And she heard that, and she said, had a show. And now we got in with the paintings. Well, the plan was we were going to have three museum shows. Dan and I left and went back to the United States, and the paintings were going to go to two other museums in the year that I was gone. And the plan was that I'd come back in a year and I'd get them and pack them home and go back to the United States.
During that year, the world changed. The wall came down, the Soviet Union was dissolving, and into that turmoil, Jack trekked back to Russia to get his paintings.
We flew out to Siberia and spent some time in Novosibirsk again with Valerian. And I kept waiting to see where my paintings were. I said, I want to see my paintings. She said, no problem. We will see your paintings later. I said, yeah, but I'm going to leave in a couple of days. I'd like to make sure they're okay. I want to make sure everything's fine. No problem. So 2 days before leaving, I'm still wondering where my paintings are. And Valerian said, we have a problem. He said, the Russian customs agent that we met last year is missing. We've been trying to find him for 3 weeks. That's why you haven't seen your paintings. We can't find him. He has all your paperwork that was recorded when you came here last year. And he says, you cannot take your paintings home. I said, what do you mean? They're my paintings. They're all signed on the bottom. He said, they're in big crates. Your signature will mean nothing, and you will not leave the airport without documentation. There's nothing we could do, and there's nothing he could do. And now my paintings are stuck in Siberia somewhere in the basement of a museum.
Jack returned home empty-handed, but he refused to give up.
Now, the problem was that back then, the internet was just starting. The phone service in Siberia was pretty sketchy. And every once in a while, I'd try to call Valerian up to see if there's any change in the policy. And there was no way to reach him by the internet. His name was Valerian Ivanchenko, which means Val, son of John. It's like Smith. There's 10 billion Ivanchenkos in Russia. And after about 10 years, I just gave up.
Years turned to decades, and almost 25 years went by since Jack's first trip to the Soviet Union.
And now it was 2013, 2014. And one day on Facebook, I see this message in Cyrillic. I can read Russian language pretty well. And it was my friend Valerian. And so I sort of half translated it, and there were some English words in there. And I said, oh my God, you're alive. You're here. My painting's okay. So a week later, I get another message back from him that says, they're fine. And then I reached out again and said, is the paperwork fixed? And a week later, I hear, no, but you're welcome to try. So I raised $5,000, and I was determined to get a film crew to come with me now. And I found two real good filmmakers, and they both said, sure.
All right, Jack, so is someone meeting us at the airport when we land in Siberia?
I sure hope so.
Is the Novosibirsk airport near the city?
I really doubt it.
Okay. How about a place to stay when we get there? Anything lined up?
1989, he got us places to stay. I'm assuming he's got something lined up.
Okay.
Valerian did meet Jack at the airport, and off they went to the basement of the Novosibirsk Museum. After a quarter century, most of Jack's paintings were still there.
How was quality? It looks good. It's fine. It's as bright as it was painted the first day.
Yeah.
There is the plumbers at Helen's Kitchen. I see a little bit of damage here. I can fix this. These are easy repairs. This happens just in any transit. This is a big moment for me, Valerian. 25 years of my dream is right here at this minute. But there's more.
After a series of detours and dead ends, Jack managed to scrape the collection back together. But he still had one old foe to contend with, Russian red tape.
Now it's a little deja vu all over again here. We're one day from getting my paintings home. He says it's all fixed, there's no problem. This is the same day that happened 24 years ago. They said, oh, there's a problem. There's a problem with the paperwork. So we're not out of this yet. Now he has to go to one other thing. He says there's another issue.
We'll try to do all this.
What I want to do is get my paintings home. That's the most important thing.
I know. And we, not only me, we are working hard to...
Jack and Valerian figure out a workaround, though it's one that completely taps out Jack's bank account. The last bit of suspense on the trip is waiting to see if his credit card will clear.
And the credit card machine goes... which I said, that's a good sound. That sounds like it's spitting out a receipt. And so basically, all the money I had in the world now paid for that DHL shipment. And 6 days later, it showed up in Stanwood. It was surreal. And I opened them up one at a time, all 17 of them. And that was the first time that the light of American sunshine had fallen on these paintings for a quarter of a century. I think that I became a stronger artist, and you heard that I have a problem with loss. And if you go back and think about it, here's another loss. After my fire, after the other fire, I bring paintings to Russia, and they're lost again. And that was almost like just sort of proof that no matter what I do, I will not end up with my own work because it'll disappear. And it was a little bit of a resurrectance for me. To finally realize that it wasn't lost, and with enough initiative and enough luck and enough blessings, that sometimes you can get your stuff back after loss. Or sometimes the loss is the most important part of your life, because where you move after the loss is maybe a place you wouldn't have gone to if you hadn't had that loss. And I went ahead and I painted 4,000 paintings when I came back brokenhearted. My life went on, but having them now sort of just sort of completes a piece of my life that I thought was gone forever.
I think you got a little bit of sense that there's a lot more than meets the ear in that story. Gabriel Spitzer here again with Kevin Kniestad. We want to just fill you in on some of the things that I think fill out the story a little bit of Jack and his quest. And one of the things that came up, he mentioned this restaurant early on in the piece called Helen's Kitchen, and mentioned that he took particular glee in crashing an airplane into it, right?
Yeah, and we fit a lot into this story, but, you know, it's one of those things where you come out of it like, wait a minute, why was he pissed at Helen?
Yeah.
I need to know more about that. Tell me exactly who this Helen person is and why he was so mad at her.
Homicidally mad.
Yeah, to the point of crashing planes into her diner.
Yeah. So Helen's Kitchen was a diner. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't remember the slight that Jack took such umbrage over. What was it again?
Well, he did talk about it. He did talk about it in his documentary.
There was this little greasy spoon named Helen's Kitchen. I would go there for breakfast, and I was on one of my many diets, and I'd go to Helen and I'd say, Helen, I want poached eggs on dry toast. And she'd say, no problem. And she'd put some butter in it, drop the egg in it, and boil it over these five little circle cups. And I'd get this, and I'd say, Helen, I don't want the butter. I just want you to take the egg, put it in the water, turn the heat down, it doesn't get all messy. No, I don't do it that way. I said, Helen, I can't eat butter. It's not on my diet. Helen says, you eat it here this way or you go somewhere else. When I decided to do some paintings of the proposed airport in Stanwood and the effect it would have in the community, my target was Helen, because Helen pissed me off.
So you don't piss off an artist is the moral of that story.
Or is you ruin his diet. Yeah.
But yeah, so you could get a little bit of a sense of Jack's personality. I mean, I hope it comes across in the story anyway, but the guy is a bit of a prankster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's always seems to be a little bit up to something. Yeah.
I think he referred to himself at some point as a brat.
He did. He referred to himself as a brat, especially after he went back to go collect his paintings 25 years later. And he had a few things up his sleeve that he wanted to do there. One of them was he wanted to bring a life-size cutout of Edward Snowden.
And you could fold him into three pieces and you could prop him up behind a table at a restaurant, and I was going to put him in all of our scenes. And so everywhere we went in Russia, you'd see Edward Snowden in some seat down in the back of the restaurant. And I also decided that I was going to bring a bunch of different colored fingernail polish, because that was the year that they were cracking down on the LGBT community in Russia. And I wanted to paint my fingernails in rainbow colors, and I wanted to get punched out in a bar on camera or get tossed in jail, hopefully for a very short time, because I figured it would be, you know, I'm a movie maker, and that would make a much more interesting film.
So Jack was really pretty keen to cause an international incident by toting around this Edward Snowden cutout and or getting beat up for looking a little queer. And I saw the Snowden cutout in his studio. He's got it displayed pretty prominently.
Oh, he still has it? That doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
Among his other bric-a-brac. Even though he did leave Snowden behind and he didn't tempt fate by painting his fingernails, he definitely did not leave his sense of mischief behind when he went on this trip.
No. You know, I think you mentioned dead ends and side trips in the story. And I think one of the side trips that really had nothing to do with trying to collect the paintings was a trip to the Mongolian border, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, more on this in a moment. But yeah. They took a lengthy sort of side trip to this mountainous, very remote region near the Mongolian border, which is full of these fairly distinctive ethnic groups. A lot of them are shamanistic cultures. And he actually introduces this shaman, this sort of priestess who gives a blessing to their trip. And among his other accoutrements, Jack brought with him, I think it was a handful of
13 or 14.
Yeah. Marshawn Lynch jerseys. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he would put them on these random people that he would wind up encountering and insist that they kind of go along with his strange, strange plans. And that included this shaman woman.
Go Hawks.
Go Fox.
Oh, Hawks. That's good.
Hawks. Hawks. Go Hawks.
Yay. Hey. Hey. Perfect.
So there you have it. And in addition to this healer woman in indigenous garb, wearing a big Marshawn Lynch jersey. He also put the jerseys on. You have to help me out here because I don't know.
He put them on one of the, a couple reporters actually, yeah, that like were covering his story.
Siberian
over there.
TV news,
yeah,
reporters.
Mm-hmm. And I think he said he ended up bringing just one Marshawn Lynch jersey home, which means he dressed up at least 13 people, suspecting people. And this was 2013, so this is the year that the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, so he was very excited about that.
So that's probably what did the trick. So there's probably people running around in Siberia and on the Mongolian border. And
no idea who Marshawn Lynch is, no idea who the Seahawks are, but
no idea he went to the Raiders.
Yeah.
So that's our Jack. You know, he's definitely got an inexhaustible supply of tricks up his sleeve. And I have to say that included one trick that gave me a little pause when we were doing this story. So I mentioned this side trip that they took to this remote region near the Mongolian border. In the film, this is portrayed as one of the legs of the journey to find these paintings. And it's a really, you know, it's a big chunk of the movie. And they really trek through inhospitable terrain. And it's a whole adventure to get to this spot where they have, you know, supposedly have intel that one of his paintings might be. And then when they get there, I don't know, how would you explain what happens next?
Well, I think I'd rather let Jack explain it.
Oh, my God. You gotta be...
apparently, we found one of my paintings.
I didn't expect it here.
What? You know, the secondary market is always a surprise when you see where your paintings end up. I'm not sure if this is an honor or if they say the painting is for... You know, it's hard to say.
No, I'm sure it's an honor, Jack.
This painting is the last time they saw a flock of flying pigs, painted in Stanwood in 1989. And here, in 2013, I find it in Siberia, for Christ's sake, in a... But I'm proud.
That's an honor, Jack.
So just to be clear, he's building up to finding this painting. They go into the private residence of some... guy.
Yeah, it's this cabin up in the woods somewhere in the middle of nowhere, literally. Yeah. Open, I think they refer to it multiple times in the DVD as where the roads end.
Right, yeah. Right. That seems to ring true. And then he opens this wooden door of the privy, which is basically a hole in the floor. Mm-hmm. And there's his painting hanging on the wall. And that's Jack's nonplussed reaction.
Yeah, yeah. And as it turns out, that's part of Jack's sort of prankster mentality. That didn't really happen. I mean, he placed that there.
This was a tall tale.
Yes.
And it was not completely obvious from the film that this was an embellishment, mm-hmm. although I had my suspicions. And then he confirmed to me that, yeah, basically his buddy Valerian wanted to take him to this place and they needed to find a way to justify it. So they made up this BS tale about finding this painting out there and making that part of the quest. Now, as a journalist and as someone who cares about checking facts, did that give me pause about the rest of Jack's story? Yes, I would say it did. However, I will point out that the stuff that is reported in our piece is only the stuff that is pretty well verifiable either by actual contemporaneous video that you can see what's clearly going on in the film. And also a lot of this was covered at the same time by the local media. So I think it was the Skagit Valley Herald and some of the local papers picked up Jack's story as well. And so I feel like we're on pretty solid ground for the things that are contained in the story. However, if you do go and watch the documentary, which I would recommend.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. Maybe buyer beware.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Anything else in the movie that stuck out for you in your memory?
Not so much in the movie, but some of the other stories. I mean, if you go to this guy's website, he's got these endless sort of tales. He's written books. He's done other videos. He's done shorts. He's done thousands of paintings. And they all seem to have, whether it's just a good story or whether there's you know, some sort of deep emotional meaning behind it, they're all really, really entertaining. And I think as long as you like a story, Jack has no shortage of them.
Yeah, you don't have to like know a lot about art or anything to appreciate his tales.
Not at all. But there's no shortage of tales.
Yeah, and that includes actually one that we had aired in a previous episode. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to our piece about how Jack turned one of his paintings into an actual functioning ant farm, I would recommend it. Yeah, so you can go to cankxsoundeffect.org to find that story and the rest of our back catalog, of course. And then naturally, check your feed here this weekend. We'll have the next full episode of our show coming up. The theme is What is Normal, which feels appropriate for this conversation, too.
Absolutely, yes.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
I'm Gabriel Spitzer. This is Sound Effect from KNKX.